bi-monthly podcast produced by the Attachment and Trauma Network. Today, Ginger and Julie are exploring three ways to get regulated and bring some contentment and joy back into our lives. The topics are gratitude, grounding, and glimmers. Let's join them.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Regulated and Relational, our podcast produced by the Attachment and Trauma Network. I'm Julie Beam.
And I'm Ginger Healy.
And we're excited to share with you, from both our personal experiences and our professional knowledge, what it truly means to be attachment-focused, trauma-informed, and how we can help children impacted by early childhood trauma. Today, we wanted to introduce you to a few mindfulness strategies. I almost said mindlessness strategies, which would be wrong.
Opposite.
We definitely want them to be mindful. Strategies that will provide emotional safety in the home and in the classroom, because we're getting close to that time of year, right? Where everything starts to amp up. We're going to be focusing on what we're thankful for. And it seems like we ought to be talking about gratitude, but it's also the time of year that's really very hard for people who are impacted by trauma and for all of us, because there's an extra added layer of stress. It's overwhelming. It's overstimulating. It's sometimes not leaving us very much time to pause and reflect and dial down the craziness that the holidays bring. But it's important that we do that. I'm feeling that already. That's why I'm thinking mindlessness, I guess, Ginger. I don't know. The stressors start to build up with school schedules and personal schedules and end of year work schedules. They all seem to sort of collide, right?
It does feel overwhelming for caregivers and for kids. I know a lot of families, parents in particular, dread this time of year. And so I'm really hoping that these tips and tricks and strategies really not only just help us survive the holiday, but actually I do think we can thrive in it. And I think that this is a very intentional, purposeful way to do that, to set the tone and set the mood. And I'm not saying it's a magic wand by any means, but I'm really hoping that we can do more than just get through it.
Exactly. And for you educators out there, I know you've got the days counted until the winter break. I know you do. You probably have the days counted till it's Thanksgiving break, because that's just around the corner. But you're probably shouting the numbers right back out at us right now as to how long it is. And it's not coming fast enough. And I get it. I truly do get it. But in the middle of all those stressors, and I know we've talked about this before related to the holidays, give yourselves permission to pause, reflect, make things smaller, dial down that craziness, and really focus on what's important, because that's what's going to make your holidays feel more complete, right? Think about what your holiday traditions are, the traditions that happen, at least in my household, that endure are ones that are relational and mean something to all of us together and are usually pretty laid back, right? They're pretty dialed back. You know, we're not going to some big, you know, off-Broadway show together. I mean, maybe that is your tradition, but we aren't at my house. It's usually the simple things, the simple food that we eat, the simple little ritual that we all do, you know, how we pass out gifts or how we do our gratitude prayers at Thanksgiving, like whatever it is. It's the smaller things.
I love that, actually. It actually gave me like this visual of moments I've had where I'm just sitting there taking it all in and enjoying it. Like, oh, that's right. That's what I've been looking forward to. Here it is. Let me just take it in. We're going to be talking about these three G's. Julie, I think you just gave us a fourth G, which is give, not only to others as we do during the holidays, but give ourselves permission. That is the gift we should give ourselves.
So. I love it, Ginger. You're just building this episode as we go. And speaking of those G's, I did not introduce them, but I want to so that we can go ahead and get started on this episode. And the three G's that Ginger is referring to are gratitude, grounding, and glimmers. Thanksgiving's around the corner. Let's start with gratitude.
Yeah, it's a great place to start. I don't think anybody would disagree that gratitude is important. But have you considered it's a tool for improvement of well-being, that it actually can be considered a healing strategy? We learn from neuroscience that when a person is under stress, stress energy is actually drawn away from the prefrontal cortex, which means it is harder to process feelings and thoughts. So during stress, we need moments where we use tools to help us get back up into that top part of our brain and access the cortex. But if there's negative thought patterns and words, that gets in the way and kind of blocks that access. So for example, if you're constantly feeling tired, which I am sure you are, but you're like saying it and feeling it and living in it, I'm so tired, I'm so tired, it will actually even make you more feel tired, right? So another example might be a student who says, I'm terrible at math. I can't do math. Math is my worst subject. Those feelings create this negative emotion associated with that thought, which results in the student actually doing poorly in math. It's like this self-fulfilling prophecy. On the flip side, positive mantras, things that you repeat, I am confident, I am grateful. Those are mantras and sayings that will activate that part of your brain, the prefrontal cortex, and that will result in more confident behavior, better performance overall. It attracts things for which you can be grateful. It just sets that tone, sets that mood, and activates it on a neuroscientific level. So feelings of gratitude and expressing gratitude causes synchronized activation in multiple brain regions. So if we were to put you under the MRI scan, you would see those parts of the brains light up. It lights up the brain's reward pathways. It boosts serotonin, those positive neurotransmitters that activate the brainstem to produce dopamine, another positive neurotransmitter. Dopamine is our brain's pleasure chemical. The more we think positive, the more we have thoughts of gratitude, the healthier and happier we feel. It is all connected. Expressing gratitude is associated with a host of mental and physical benefits. Studies have shown that feeling thankful will improve sleep, improve mood, and increase and boost immunity. Gratitude can decrease depression, anxiety, difficulties with chronic pain, and risk of disease. This is all heavily documented, research-based information.
Yeah, it's fascinating and it's important to realize. And at the same time, my brain that is both grateful for things, but also not always positive is going, wow, when I'm like feeling super overwhelmed and stressed out, that's like the last thing that my brain is telling me is to feel grateful. So it's like a practice I'm going to have to learn, like learn and seek out as opposed to just wait for it to come to me that I'm grateful.
Right. Well, and that's why it's called a practice. It needs to be done repetitiously. And what we do over and over again becomes stronger, right?
And at the same time, also practice to sort of challenge those negative things that I can't, I'm tired, I'm overwhelmed, you know, almost like I'm overwhelmed. But what is out there to be grateful about?
There can be two truths. You can be tired and you can practice gratitude. We can do both.
Right. Yeah. So it is about the messages. And so lots of the ways that practice gratitude are messages, are written messages, are listening to messages, are reading messages, are leaving yourself messages. So writing in a gratitude journal, the things, you know, reflectively thinking back over your day, what was I grateful for today? I was grateful for hitting all the green lights on the way to work. So I made it in time, even though I left my house late, right? So there's an example of I was late and stressed, but I recognized that I didn't get hung up in traffic. I'm grateful. Or yeah. I was grateful, you know, that my husband offered to fix dinner because he got home first, or, you know, whatever those things are that maybe we wouldn't have even noticed if we weren't keeping a journal or trying to keep a tally on those things, right? Listening to positive affirmations, I guess you could, you know, there are lots of opportunities to do that through different websites and apps that will, yep. that will do that. Leaving yourself notes, ATMs, little connected notes that we have teachers use for students and parents use for their children, use them for yourself. You know, the ones that say things like, you've got this, or I believe in you, are a good thing to stick on your own bathroom mirror in the morning, just to remind yourself. Big stuff is hard, but you can handle it, right? I think the other thing that came up for me was the importance of giving the gratitude to others. You know, we usually look at gratitude in terms of, let's be grateful to others so that they can feel it. But remember, life is all about the relationships. So it doesn't surprise me that feeling gratitude ourselves is super healthy for us emotionally, but we kind of double that effect when we go ahead and verbalize it, express the gratitude. You know what it's like on the receiving end when your significant other or a close friend actually expresses gratitude for something that you've done, something that you weren't even sure they saw you do, right? And yeah. or that you just have done so often that you don't even think about it anymore. And you go, oh, yeah. And it changes your feelings and your day and can actually activate all of those brain chemicals, the serotonin and the dopamine for you. We're relational beings. And
I think it can be really contagious and on either way, right? The negative, the misery, the wallowing and all that can be really contagious. But adversely, the gratitude and the positive affirmations can really be contagious as well.
Yeah. And so I would encourage you that if you don't have gratitude practices of some sort, that you figure out what you can, and that this time of year, when people are thinking about being grateful, you may have like a platter that says that, or napkins you're going to use for your big meal that say thankful. They're not just words. It's not just the holiday. It has purpose. And maybe you start there. Maybe you're one of your ways of expressing gratitude is to start with a gratitude tradition around the holiday. The one that came home from school for my kids that has seemed to endure is the idea of having little leaf-shaped messages that we fill out what we're grateful for and tie, you know, to twigs or a tree or, you know, some sort of thing as a, something in our room where we're eating at Thanksgiving, whether it's the centerpiece or off to the side. And you know, just having a stack of those for everybody to think about prior to the meal. It also gives everybody who's not intently cooking something to do and think about as they show up and, you know, start the day, you know, together. And then reading them, like taking time mm-hmm. to read them or say what they are, because the saying out loud of them, even if it isn't a direct gratitude towards another person in that room, is affirming and positive, and it activates all of our brains in that positive way.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think there's a lot of fun ways to bring all of that into the classroom. I was doing some gratitude research for my book and found some really fun gratitude focused drawing prompts for kids. And I think that's what it's all about. We don't have to just come up with everything on our own. There's a lot already out there. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. And just having a prompt, it doesn't mean you have to stick to it, but it can just activate, you know, a way to keep going on it. So you can draw something that makes you happy. You can draw someone who helps you. You can draw something you think is fun. I loved all these prompts, and we can put those in the show notes too for educators to put into the classroom. Awesome. I also, while I was looking, I found it kind of like a gratitude journal, but just gratitude worksheets with different prompts. So ways to celebrate gratitude, list people that you're thankful for, all those hard lessons. What did you learn from them? What can you pull out from the hard times to focus and shift you into the good times? Your greatest memories. I mean, I kind of ended up going down a rabbit hole because there was so much good, fun gratitude research out there and prompts for the classroom and for the home. So we'll link some of those to you, but that way you don't have to feel overwhelmed with, yeah, I should do this, but I don't know where to begin. It's all done for you.
Right.
So
fun. Well, and I just thought of one that I know is probably not new to me at all. In fact, I know I've heard this before, but what if parents that are picking up their kids from school, you know, you always are doing some kind of debrief. What if you start with the gratitude piece as your debrief instead of, you know, what happened at school today? Because that might be not necessarily, you know, super positive, but, you know, what were you grateful about at school today? And see what they, and then you also be ready to share what you've been grateful about with your day. And that really shifts the tone a lot of times, because a lot of times we're going to all, you know, start with what went wrong at school. I didn't get the dessert I wanted, or I didn't get the grade on my math test I wanted. And, you know, and you can get to that information, but why not give it a spin of gratitude at the beginning?
So good. Just a simple shift in wording. Well, should we go on to our next G? Our next G is grounding. So grounding, or another word for it is earthing, because you're actually physically, you know, grounding and touching the earth, refers to the discovery that bodily contact with the earth's natural electric charge actually stabilizes our own physiology. It's been shown to reduce inflammation, pain, stress, improve blood flow, energy, sleep. Grounding actually generates greater well-being. It's a powerful form of bottom-up regulation. So when we feel really disconnected, our kids are just struggling with dysregulation, one of the tools I always recommend to parents and to educators is grounding. What I mean by that is that when we're dysregulated or stressed, we function in our lower brain, that survival brain. We only care about the very basics, that higher level thinking in that cortex. We're not there. We can't access that. And so we have to get there. And how we get there is using bottom-up strategies like mindfulness, meditation, deep breathing, grounding. It helps us shift into our upstairs brain. And then, of course, once we're in our upstairs brain, we can function, we can perform better, we can meet expectations. So this is a great strategy that alleviates not only physical pain, but emotional pain, because it helps us focus, it centers us, and it creates that emotional safety. It activates our brain so that it can be used, especially during times of anxiety, anger, just those big emotions that we've kind of been referring to when I say the word dysregulation. It can help us be more sharp and focused. This is great for students before a test. So if a student is suddenly panicking before a test, or like a musical performance or an athletic game, it will help bring students back into the present and really connect with their bodies. Because sometimes when we're scared and worried, we start to kind of daydream and lose focus because we don't want to feel the heavy pain. So this grounding will help us with all of that.
Right. I love it. I love all of that. And I realized that I do some things as I was sitting here waiting to talk and figuring out where you were going with all of this to ground myself. I don't click that pin because it's going to pick up on the sound, but I was rubbing the pin and, you know, doing all of the tactile things that help me stay grounded. And so the physical grounding is a big deal, and rubbing something in your pocket, like having a stone in your pocket or a coin in your pocket that has texture, and rubbing it is a grounding tool. So or what else I was doing with my hands that Ginger can now see because I'm showing her, where I was just sort of like clasping my hands to and from in sort of a prayer position, right? Like, yeah, and squeezing them, right? Feeling that. I read the words of that as an idea, and I immediately went, oh yeah, that's what I want to do. So I guess I'm a big physical grounding person, because, you know, you just jumping up and down, just standing, like flexing your heels or digging them into the floor, like going up on your toes and then down on your heels, just to actually earth yourself, right, is really important. My personal favorite, though, is a 1 minute dance party. There's something about the release of tension in that dance party. We use dance parties at my house a lot. And what's funny is that must have been, used in my house as a child. Although I don't have a lot of clear memories of that, because when my sister comes to visit, yeah, we release a lot of tension by dancing together as we're cooking in the kitchen. It's a funny trait that we both have, but it's wonderful.
Yes, that movement, right?
The movement is huge, right? You know, and the music is helpful as well, because there's a rhythm to it, and that the physical grounding is hugely important to get yourself focused back in on whatever the task is. The soothing grounding that you can do for yourself are, you know, things like smells. That's huge, right? We could do a whole session on what different smells do for you. But if you have smells that you really like, you should keep them around in some ways, essentially.
Candles. Air fresheners, lotions.
Yeah, use them for yourself. You know, all the kind things that you can state to other people or they can state to you. I love the idea of asking children questions about, you know, what is your favorite whatever, animal, color, cartoon, whatever you can think of, to get them do that sort of brain transition between, yeah, I'm so anxious or I'm so, you know, worked up about this, into thinking, what is my favorite animal? You know, and offering that up. Or what are you looking forward to? Because then it transports you out of the dysregulation of the moment, yeah, into sort of a future state, right?
Yeah, it distracts you, but it also sends the message, somebody cares about me. They are here with me, right, helping me feel better. And it soothes them because they know they're not alone in that crazy big feeling, right?
Right. Right. And singing is huge. I mean, singing, mm-hmm, always makes you feel better. So breaking into song on your own is good. Or even singing to somebody who is, you know, starting to flip their lid. If their lid is all the way flipped, singing may not be what works for them. But, you know, singing a song that the two of you know, could get, yes, into singing with you.
I have seen teachers do this, where a classroom is kind of getting out of control and they'll do a call out or the school song or something that ropes them back in, and they're all getting together. And I've seen it done as called like an attention getter. Like if the teacher calls out peanut butter and then the class calls out jelly, you know, something like that. But just the song, I've seen them break out into just a quick, you know, song that the students know. And
yeah,
can sing,
especially
back,
if it's got some movement to it too. If,
yeah,
it has action,
exactly,
it's even better, right? And then there are some things that you can do mentally, you know, silently to yourself, or coach children through doing as they're either starting to flip their lid or coming back down out of a dysregulation, that I think are really important. Things like counting backwards, or alphabetically thinking about animals or food. A is for apple, B is for banana, C is for carrot, you know, those kinds of things. And just thinking that through, because it's not taxing on your prefrontal cortex necessarily, but it's putting it back online by doing that,
yeah,
right? Spelling,
yeah,
and color. There's all kinds of, you know, things that you could sort of almost rote things that you could do that kind of, you know, bring yourself back around if you have experienced, you know, a big dysregulation and you're trying to get yourself back to being present and alert and focused. And
yeah, one of the things I was thinking of when you were talking about all these different ways to ground was the calm kits that ATN has, and all the things in the calm kit usually have a link to grounding. So the different textures, the different tactile items, the ways to move, those are all grounding. So in your home or in the classroom, we always recommend a calm kit or a regulation toolkit, or, you know, mm-hmm, some schools will have like a Zen den, the regulation space that can all be created in the home too. It incorporates all these grounding tools. So
yeah,
it's a great way to help regulate and soothe.
And just when you didn't think all these G's matched up, I've got to tell you that gratitude really is and can be thought of as a form of grounding, right? Practicing that gratitude and that mindfulness you know, maybe that what you're doing mentally and to soothe yourself is that saying what you're grateful for in your head, right? And you combine all of those things together, it allows you to acknowledge the positive things in your life. And that brings you back to being fully present, right? During hard times, a grounding practice that's focused on gratitude may help you stay balanced and in control of your emotions by decreasing the feelings of overwhelmingness. I mean, you can obviously you can feel overwhelmed, but you can also meet your feeling of being overwhelmed with the practice of gratitude and go, okay, all right, I'm more grounded now because I'm thinking about those things.
So good. I love it. Okay, our final G that we want to introduce you to today is called glimmers. Glimmers is a concept and strategy created by Deb Dana. And wow. She has worked really closely with Dr. Stephen Porges. It's based on polyvagal theory. And Deb Dana tells us that if we recognize small positive moments over and over on the repeat, that actually will begin to rewire our nervous system. A lot of our kids have oversensitized nervous systems. A lot of adults do, right? I love that all these strategies are for children who have been impacted by trauma and adults, like anyone and everyone, especially during the holiday time. So the shift to focusing on positivity here, it can have a beneficial impact on both our physical and our mental health. So what glimmers are, they're the opposite of triggers. They're cues of safety that bring us back into a regulated state. So, you know, triggers could be considered something that activates our nervous system where we perceive danger or threat. It could be real danger or threat, or it could just be something that makes us worried about something, right, and activates our nervous system. So glimmers is the exact opposite of this. Glimmers instill peace. They evoke joy. They calm a nervous system that's in survival mode and bring us back to a state of autonomic regulation. And they can be internal or they can be external. But even just a brief positive emotion can build and help us endure and build those enduring resources. So what we would need to do here is bring attention to every small moment that is good, that brings us happiness and peace. And sometimes I've heard them referred to as like a blessing or just something that we are thankful for and have gratitude for. So if we bring attention to those small movements over and over again, it will move our system toward change. Multiple micro moments can be significant enough to create an entire autonomic shift. So glimmers are actually a great trauma recovery resource. And we can actually be very intentional about becoming aware of glimmers that happen every day in our life. There are hundreds of moments possible if we look for them. Mm-hmm. We just need notice them, and just noticing them is a powerful healing practice that will add up. So here's one way to do that. Start the day with just setting the intention. Today, I'm going to look for and find a glimmer, and then go ahead and look for anything, any small thing. And when you find it, point it out, say it out loud, even if you're alone. That will resonate within you. But if you're a teacher with a student, say, okay, class, today we are going to find at least one glimmer. And then when you find it, point it out, say it out loud. It doesn't need to be like some big grand experience, like I got an A on a test. It can be that I was struggling and I did my best. It can be just any micro moment in the day that brought joy, where you felt safe, where you felt connected, and then just have it be a small positive call out. And the more we do that, the more it'll begin to positively shape our nervous system. And it does it in just a really gentle way. Mm-hmm. And here's one thing that I've noticed about glimmers, because I've been trying to put this into my own life, that the more I notice them, the more I find them, mm-hmm. right? So I call that glimmer seeking, and I promise you it will change your brain and change your life. And here's the other thing. Here's why. It's like a surefire win here. If you can't find one, you can create one. By doing something nice for somebody else, you have just created a glimmer for them and for you. So you can incorporate this in the classroom. Students can create their own glimmers by helping other students. They can do it at home, helping siblings. But finding moments of gratitude, providing service to one another, even just being present in the moment and just noticing the good all around you, seeking that out and creating it. It's so good. It's so good. So Deb Dana gives some great ideas how to incorporate this in the home and in the school. She has a glimmer map. We can put that in the show notes, but it's really cool because it has you track your glimmers. And if you're not finding them, then it has you create them. So she has a glimmer map. And then I've also seen schools do like a glimmer jar or a glimmer basket. And it has little pieces of paper so that students can, as soon as they find a glimmer or create a glimmer, they write it down, put it in the glimmer jar, put it in the glimmer basket. And then at the end of the week, the teacher reads them out. And it's so motivating for students to search for the glimmers and create the glimmers when they do that. So I've seen it done in other ways too, like a glimmer journal, kind of like a gratitude journal, but you can get creative with however you want the glimmers to be held and however you want to read it back to them, or, you know, revisit the glimmers, remember the glimmers that happened that day or that week. The implementation possibilities of this are endless, but it's, to me, really exciting and also really simple, just by taking a moment each day to look for it, to record it, and to repeat it back. It will strengthen
that's
you.
That's cool. Yeah. And it gives parents something in the home to ask their children about too throughout the day and to look for themselves. And we would probably keep track of it on a whiteboard on the refrigerator or someplace, you know, and just like what we saw today.
Yeah. It's a great prompt. Tell me about your glimmers today. And kids that can't write, they can draw the pictures of it. They can describe it verbally, you know, what I did today. Like, there's just no boundaries on this, you know.
No, I love it. As you're talking, I kept thinking, okay, well, what are my glimmers so far today? And I stepped out the door at lunch and things are still a little bit muggy here in the South, even though it's fall time, but today they were not. And I went, oh, it is a glorious day out here. And that was a glimmer, right? It was just that little bit of joy that there was a relief from that oppressive humidity that we struggled with all summer and into the fall, and went, oh, there it is. The pleasure look of a family member at holiday time a lot of times is where glimmers are just everywhere, right?
Well, that's the whole thing, is nothing is insignificant. It can be the absolute most smallest, you know, microdose of a happy moment. I just love the focus on the positive. I will tell you, I think I've said this before, but one of my very favorite neuroscience realizations is that saying it out loud, giving it voice, releases positive hormones that dispel negative stress hormones. So the focus of it and the saying it out loud and the sharing of it really can do a lot for our physical, mental, emotional health. And that's what we're all about, right?
Okay. Well, we hope that you have gotten some gratitude, grounding, and glimmer ideas from us in this time of year, that all of those things are abundant and existing, and so are all of the stressors. We don't want to stress you out at all about trying to implement new things in your life. That's not our goal here. But we are grateful for you as listeners, and we know that you're going to be able to find a glimmer in your day, and you're going to be able to use some of these tools in a way that keeps you grounded and focused on looking for those glimmers throughout the holidays. Have great holidays. Make them work for you and your family. We'll catch you next time.
This has been another episode of Regulated and Relational. Next time, Julie and Ginger will share what it truly means to be trauma-informed and how that differs from trauma-sensitive and trauma-responsive. A special thank you to Joe Kramer for donating our music. For more information about the Attachment and Trauma Network, visit our website at www.attachtrauma.org. Show notes and upcoming episodes will be available on our website and through anchor.fm. I'm Lorraine Schneider. Thank you.